Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Now, it is true that the numbers of young women entering and even excelling in the sciences is more than at any one point in human history. Studies continue to show that there are more women scientists today than in the previous decades. But the numbers are still way below their male counterparts. In Africa, young women are still reluctant to undertake studies in science, technology, engineering, and math, also known by the acronym STEM. The glaring gender imbalance in these science fields is often driven by many factors, top of which is the pervasive gender biases and stereotypes that exist in our societies. Many young women have been made to believe that they don't have the ability and skills to perform to the levels of their male counterparts. In our conversations with young women across the continent, many believe that they would perform poorly in STEM subjects, and so even when they're given the opportunity, they do not try their very best. For many others, the opportunities to engage in the science fields are not present. And in a way, this has less to do with the issue of gender biases and more with our poor education systems and the tools given to our students as they pursue their studies. There's generally a lack of capacity and infrastructure in many of our institutions of learning. And that's why in much of sub-Saharan Africa, the quality of basic education in science and math is way below international standards. It also has something to do with why scientific research coming out of Africa accounts for merely 1% of the total global scientific research. But what are the other issues or factors that have created the gender imbalance in STEM? And what do African students have to do to catch up with the rest of the world? How do we increase opportunities for girls in these fields? Now, these conversations are starting to take place on the continent, and on the show today, we will speak to young women in Africa who are excelling in these sciences, and we will talk about their work, but most importantly, their aspiration and their inspiration. So let's continue this important conversation right here on The Voice of America. Don't go away. Let's start off by listening to some of your opinions. What is it that discourages young women to join the science field?
Girls are good in science, so we just need to change that mindset of boys being the best in town. And then there are some doctors who are around, and there are female doctors. Those doctors should be coming out, speaking in public, telling girls that they have done it and they can also do it in school. Yeah. The doctors who are female should be role model. And they should be informing the other girls who are in schools that science is good for them and they can do well.
What should be done to encourage girls to take science subjects? I think first of all begins at home. Parents should be educated. They should be taught how to involve the girls and let me say generally the children to teach them some things at home. Sometimes they fear the science subjects because science, normally when you talk about it, it is more to do with, the reproductive organs and other things with the human being. That is what normally goes to your mind.
Now, the thing is like this, We girls, actually, we tend sometimes to branch away from the science subjects. When you try to look at the nurses and the doctors we have around there, majority are men. So what I want to say, and maybe what can encourage them to do science is are the teachers themselves at school.
You will understand very soon all the problems of your nation. We want a revolution. Young people revolution, intelligent revolution, must be African education.
In your mind, brother.
What's up, Africa? You are listening to Upfront on the Voice of America.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. In case you're just joining us on the show today, we're exploring some of the issues behind the disparities between women in sciences, men and women in sciences in Africa. And as we said earlier, part of the reason is there's an issue of gender biases, and also we can't overlook the issue of poor education systems, which includes lack of facilities, institutional capacity to impart scientific knowledge onto students, and mostly girls. This coupled with some of the misconceptions in society that women or girls would not perform well compared to young men in the scientific fields. We should also point out that most of our education systems over the years put a lot of emphasis on disciplines like the humanities, and there was a tendency to teach more subjects like history and other social sciences. But as we begin to see the past decade or two, it's beginning to change, mainly because of the rapid increase in IT use and consumption in Africa. However, even with this new emphasis on sciences, a large segment of society is still underrepresented, and that is girls and women. So the question is then, how do we get more young women to get interested in the science field? Evelyn Gitau is a Kenyan research scientist. She's also a next Einstein fellow, who says that she found inspiration in the most unexpected places. And one of them is a movie, a 1995 medical disaster movie known as Outbreak. But most importantly, she credits mentorship. She had a mentor, a university chemistry professor who was a mentor and gave her space to watch, to learn, and to grow in the world of sciences. Evelyn currently conducts cutting-edge research in Kenya, focusing on investigating the changes in protein levels as markers for severe diseases. I reached her on the phone as she was getting ready to leave her office in Nairobi. Dr. Evelyn Gitau, welcome to the show and thanks for joining us. First, can you tell us about yourself and how your interest and journey into science started?
Okay, so I trained as an undergraduate. I had something very clear that I wanted to do something lab-based, because I did chemistry. But the reason I did chemistry is because I loved it from high school, but I knew that I could turn it into doing some, well, I thought at that time the movie Outbreak came out, so I thought it would be exciting to use chemistry to answer some of the health problems that we had. So it was the Marburg virus at the time, and that was what Outbreak was about. It was a similar virus to Ebola.
All right. So fast forward a couple of years later, you were in college. You started to pursue chemistry.
So I did chemistry. I did the basic, all the analytical. But what I found is that the relationship to the chemistry I was doing to the health sciences wasn't that strong. So I chose to do a master's in biomedical sciences, because, as I said, I always had an interest in applying any of the sciences that I did into the medical field. Upon doing that, I then, you know, was looking for a research career. I always knew it had to be research. So I came back to Kenya and I did, I joined the Kenya Medical Research Institute, and I was doing pharmacology, is where we try to understand how drugs work in the human body. And I worked for that job for about 2 years, and they then sponsored me to do a PhD in a related field where I was trying to understand how the body, how the host responds to drugs, as well as to the infections that we get, to try and understand how we better treat the infections that we get.
Okay. Now, as a young woman in college or high school, was there a point where you felt that this is not a field that you would easily fit into?
My love for chemistry started a long time ago. So in high school, I was in an all-girls school in high school here in Kenya. I was lucky that I was in one of the better schools in terms of sciences, but it was always expected that the girls would do better in arts. So if you had a love for sciences, it wasn't, you know, unless you were going to be a medical doctor, it wasn't expected that you would do a pure science field. Very early on, I interacted with a professor at the University of Nairobi in chemistry, and he actually, I attribute a lot of my love for chemistry from him. In my second year in high school, he invited me to spend time in his class and his lab. It was an organic chem class and biochem in university. It was an all-male university class.
Okay. So you had a mentor who actually pushed you, helped you along the way.
Yes, I did, and he was it was an older gentleman. One of my I think I would say he liked having interaction with students. But as I said, the class that he was running for, it was a biochemistry lot for that year, and actually 2 years in a row in university, it was all male. At the time, the biochemistry classes were very small in university; not very many people took them. You can imagine me, a girl. This is a male professor, and amongst boys, and.
And you were the only girl sitting in there. Being in a class full of boys studying a subject that, you know, was known traditionally to be a field of men, did that not intimidate you to say, you know, maybe you have a change of mind?
Now, this is the difference. So, of course, I was in an all-girls high school for school. Mm. And there, well, as I said, it was artsy. They had this belief of, you know, girls are the next leaders. So I was lucky that I was in that type of high school. But he was a father of girls. And he felt that he had to make sure all girls could fight boys. So he, the lecturer himself, had this thing of, yes, you see, it's only boys, but I think you have it. You're no different from them. I think it was the second year unis, and I was in my third year in high school, almost finishing at the time. And he almost gave it as a challenge. You know, we in the early 90s, we were being told, you can be as good as any boy. Mm-hmm. And this is a father of daughters, because he didn't have any sons,
right,
saying the same thing in his class. So for me, it was almost a challenge of, I can be as any boy.
Dr. Evelyn Gitau is a Kenyan researcher and also a Next Einstein Fellow. We're still talking about why there are fewer numbers of girls in the sciences, exploring the science subjects, the science field, why there is such a disparity of uptake in women and men, or boys and girls on the African continent, as there is everywhere else in the world. But we tend to see that the numbers in Africa are much higher than anywhere else in the world. And we're trying to explore that topic today. If you're listening into the show right now and you want to tweet us your opinion, you can tweet me at @UpfrontAfrica. That's my Twitter handle. Or you can tweet at VOA Africa and let us know what you think about our topic today and what your opinion is on our topic today. Dr. Evelyn Gitau is a Kenyan researcher and also a Next Einstein Fellow. Does it get easier as a woman scientist?
Well, it does and it doesn't, but opportunities are very limited for women.
Professionally?
Professionally, at least in Africa. The problem with science in Africa is, overall, it's a low-paying job, and it's the returns are not high. So for women, we tend to stay in science because we tend to be more, well, I say for men are more ambitious in some of these things, so they're not going to look at science as a career. But the challenge is where you're a woman, you have to prove yourself 10 times more. And while you're doing that, you still have to run, you know, for me, running a family, I have children. You can easily stay in the lab 24 hours as a guy in most places. In Africa, it's not expected and it is frowned upon. So if I have an experiment where I have to watch a parasite grow for 48 hours, that's a bit tricky. So for women, it's not a chosen career for many reasons. The time, the hours that you have to put in to succeed, are not, they don't correlate to the culture that we come from.
Right. And you have to be home to cook, difficult. Look after the kid, because are some of the maternal expectations of a woman in a home, whether you're professional or not.
Yes.
And then
culturally, there's also been this thought that scientists, they engage in strange practices, at least where I worked. And so women, you know, doing the scientists, they start associating it with all other things. Like, yeah, what do they do in that lab? Why do they want my blood? She must be a witch.
It's very interesting that some of these stereotypes are amplified more when a woman is professionally engaged in the sciences.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. Now, you said something to the effect that sciences in general on the African continent are not a very paying profession. Is that correct? I thought that since there are generally fewer scientists, that they tend to make more money. Is that a misconception on my behalf, on my side?
It's definitely a misconception, and mainly because there's not enough investment in science in Africa. So the returns, my supervisor, and who has been my mentor through my career, my PhD supervisor, he always said, you're not coming into science to make money. You know, if you are, especially in Africa, then you've got to think twice, because that's not the reality. You make money in science in Africa. It's sacrifice. You're constantly trying to find the next grant, which is not available because we don't have enough invested to give you the money to drive science. So it's a low paying and a very high risk job to be in, because there's no continuity unless, you know, the few who are there have been very good at getting funding, but there are very few scientists who can tell you that they've been consistently doing that. So what you find in scientists is they have to then do a lot of side things to survive, and maybe that might have an effect on our excellence, because we do have to survive by moonlighting, teaching at the parallel programs in the universities, rather than focusing 100% on research, which is what you need to be doing as a scientist to excel. And that's just the reality. It's not a good, and it's a very low paying job.
Let's talk about research. Because one of the many complaints that I've had from researchers of in the US or anywhere in the world who are not on the African continent is that it's really hard to do research on the continent, because then they don't have the facilities, there's no infrastructure. Why has there not been a conscious effort by many of our governments to invest in research on the continent? But also, most importantly, what does that mean for the research that is produced outside of the continent coming in and being used to basically respond to some of the issues on the continent?
So I'll start with your last question first. We as Africa are consumers of others' innovations, and that's not going to change unless we invest more in research. And the reason it's not going to change and we're going to continue being consumers is because we're not investing, we're not driving the centers of excellence. The governments are not putting in money to create the environment to enable research to go on. And the other thing is, while we talk about we are consumers, sometimes we're not necessarily consuming the right thing for us. So some of the vaccines that are prioritized for Africa may not necessarily be Africa-wide a priority, but because it's not an Africa-led initiative, I like there's a Kiswahili saying that says you only feel the pinch of the shoe if you're wearing it, right? So if someone's dictating what is from outside or what we are consuming, they're not necessarily looking at the problem at the point where we are within it, because they're not here. So they look and say, for example, they look and say we need vaccines for rotavirus, which is good because that's one of the bigger killers in Africa and in children. However, do we have the strains as they are necessarily the strains in Africa? Are they Africa-wide, or are we just prescribing one vaccine when we have so many strains that we need to have research being done at different levels, etc.? That is not something that I can answer for you right now, but all I can say is I think if we were focused on different areas in Africa, if you actually went to different countries and did some research onto what the needs are and what Africa believes is important, you'd find that it might be different from what we think is a priority in terms of research because of it being dictated from the funder side of things. How do we change it? We as scientists, I think we have a role, a very important role, to make policymakers understand, number one, what the research we're doing is all about, and number two, to show them that development cannot go without the research that we're doing. Because governments will come back and say priorities, poverty, we've got too many needs for our money, we can't prioritize research as you want it to be done. But that's a failure, I think, in terms of the researchers in Africa. We have not made policymakers understand that some of those challenges, if we actually did the research, we would be able to get the answers that would then reduce. So if it went hand in hand, we'd be working together to bring down poverty. For example, if, again, you come back and you have the perfect vaccine for one of the killers in Africa, or if you were working on, if a vaccine that protected children who were dying constantly with I would say, a simple virus for diarrhea that was then rolled out in a systematic way that made sense, that would reduce the poverty level. So, you know, we have to show them the benefits of the research, but we're not doing that as well,
right,
in terms of researchers.
What needs to change at the very basic educational level to encourage young women to get into the sciences?
I think we have to make it a bit more practical. We don't train innovators in science. We train academics right now, and that's the education. The level of education we have in Africa right now is not giving that message out. You know, you can make entrepreneurs out of scientists, and you need to make entrepreneurs out of scientists. So you have to start very early, because thinking innovatively and turning that innovation into a product that can be used is a whole different skill set than the person who can read and regurgitate the science. So I think we have to start very early, even before university, to start giving that exposure, changing how our science clubs in Africa work, you know, at the grassroots level. And I'm not talking about the big cities, Nairobi, Joburg, etc. I'm talking about the ones in the village. When you're teaching the science, it has to be applicable in a way that they can see this could change and actually change the way we live and how we do things.
Evelyn, thank you very much. I really appreciate talking to you. Dr. Evelyn Gitau is a Kenyan researcher and also a Next Einstein Fellow. Now, experts said that if we are to find local solutions to many of the big problems on the continent, issues such as climate change, universal access to water, disease, and renewable energy, the continent will require skills of scientists. And in this case, women scientists. There's got to be a reflection in gender balance. Women scientists like Alta in South Africa have new ideas and solutions. Alta obtained her doctorate degree at the age of 24. She's currently working on how the diet of Black South Africans contributes to the development of high blood pressure. She says that she hopes to turn around the upward trend in hypertension development in Africa.
Tell us personally, as a woman scientist, was there something that inspired you to join the sciences?
That's a good question, actually. Well, I have three older brothers, and all of us, and also my sister, I have one younger sister as well, and all of us had simply from young ages been interested more in the sciences. So where they went into the fields more of physics and engineering, I was more into the biological sciences, interested there. So I don't know, from a younger age, and I also had some of my family members since I was young had heart disease. So I guess it really triggered me to start working in this field, and the older I got, the more intrigued I became.
Now, the problem for much of sub-Saharan Africa is a low quality of basic education in science and math. And if there's going to be a change in the uptake of these subjects, more young women need to be encouraged and supported from childhood. And that means that educators have to have the skills required to nurture our future scientists. Nyarazo Mashayamombe is a girls' rights activist from Zimbabwe. She says that part of the reason why young women are turned off from pursuing sciences in schools has to do with the educators, their teachers specifically, because teachers play a very instrumental role in guiding students from a very early age on which subjects to take.
Girls are taught mainly, you find that the teachers that were teaching science subjects are male teachers who already are flying around words like, oh, well, if there's a challenge that needs to be solved in the class, they're going to appoint boys and are going to dismiss girls. And girls are also going to dismiss themselves and say, you know what, I'm not going to do sciences, I'm going to focus on, because again, the culture that socializes the girl child.
Some of the things are subliminal.
Exactly. So it's critical for us to realize that as brothers, as sisters, as
fathers,
we need to build the confidence of our young women to say there's nothing that you can do. What the boys can do, you also can do. And also to focus on even our teaching curriculum, our teacher curriculum, when we're training the teachers, to focus on issues of gender and socialization, cultural limitations that expose girls and young women, you know, to be unable to then achieve what they otherwise could.
during my undergraduate medical, during my medical training, I was fortunate to, I did an additional degree in global health, and that gave me a sort of perspective of sort of a very macro and upstream drivers of health. So that years later on, after, you know, training in internal medicine and working in emergency and then later on in infectious diseases, what drove me into research initially and then into public health was really trying to understand what was going on. So at first I was in epidemiology and trying to understand, well, with HIV and TB, what is happening here? And then the more you get involved and the more you expand your vision in a way, you start wondering, well, what is driving people here in the first place? Why do we have people with coexisting infectious diseases, but at the same time are obese and have increasing risk of diabetes? And so suddenly, once your perspective is shifted that way, it's suddenly not adequate to just focus in on one. And my public health training came in where you kind of look further upstream and look at the preventative approaches. I think one of the best ways I find to describe it is a parable that somebody that is actually quite widely cited of looking, you know, being on the banks of a river and noticing somebody drowning. So you swim out, you pull them out, you resuscitate them. Just as they're coming to you, look up, you see somebody else drowning. You go out, you swim out, you resuscitate. They just about make it. You look up again, there's somebody, and you're just going out and back, out and back, pulling and saving these lives. And you're so busy doing that that you don't have time to look up on the cliff and look at who's pushing them in. And so I got to the point where I thought, I want to find out who's pushing them in.
And that's so you don't have to do the saving multiple. Right. I like that. I've never had that before. That's beautiful.
Unfortunately, I didn't make it out, but it's
well, I learned something today. So let's talk about STEM. As a young woman, well, what are some of the things that drove you towards this profession? And at any point, did you ever feel like this was, as they say, a male-dominated field, and that you were not really welcome to join it as much as, say, your young male counterparts? At what point in your education did you decide that this is the path you're going to take?
Yeah. So starting off, you know, I came at this from medicine, and I think I'm relatively fortunate in that medicine is probably one of the more the medical sciences are one of the more gender equitable fields. But as I kind of got into public health and into academia and into research, one of the things I noticed is that we have a lot of focus on getting the girl child, on getting females into science, but perhaps not enough on retaining. And so what we find is that, okay, we actually have made great strides and in encouraging girls to study the STEM subjects, but we still have a scientific culture that is not entirely conducive to retaining women in science. So you see at the bottom level, entry level, quite a few females. At the top echelons, you see this this leaky pipeline, as it were, and the loss of that gender equity with the underrepresentation of women in the top echelons of the STEM subjects in research. And I think what that really needs is for, as a scientific group and environment, to really introspect and say, well, what are the environmental barriers, and look at some of the policies that are in place that indirectly and indirectly act as barriers to women, especially young and emerging women, female scientists. And that is something that we at another hat that I wear is as a co-chair of the South African Young Academy of Science. And this is something that we and my fellow members are very passionate about, and really putting out there that in addition to feeding the pipeline, we need to plug the leaks in the pipeline.
And with that, we come to the end of our program. Thank you to our listeners who tuned in today.
check us out on Facebook, type in keywords Upfront Africa VOA. Let's talk again next week, same time, right here on The Voice of America. Goodbye. Bimubona bigutera urujijo wishidikanyiriya niyo shusho isi dutuyemo abaseka bose siko bishimye mwana wanjye oh yeah.